Try being a slave in that era.
All the orifices, or?
Well, exactly.
That's so weird.
And then you would. The Datu became a natural target for vengeful spirits. Part of the eulogy, and again, this is the eulogy, is the sexual fulfillment of either the man or the woman.
Like he got a lot of orgasms?
I don't know what that means.
Or is he it, gave a lot of
is
orgasms.
Is it progeny? She didn't fake it. It was really good. We can unpack that.
We can.
But not today, right?
The episode called Mommy Mia.
That's not what that Respectfully, that's not what the it's called. Anima's like, let's see. What does it mean when it rains on a bright sunny day?
Why do I have to turn my clothes inside out every time I get lost?
And why does your pantry always have to be ready with adobo ingredients at any point in time?
I don't know, but we'll find out. I'm Anima.
And I'm Ice. And this is the Gods Must Be Crazy. We are super passionate about Philippine mythology and folklore. And we want to learn about it, with each other.
Yeah.
So, every other week or so, we will be bringing stories that we're super interested and curious about and telling it to each other. And we'd love if you could join us.
So join us to learn about where these myths come from, What are they all about, and do these myths persist till today?
Hello. And
Hi.
Welcome to part 3 of our death and burial series.
In the first one of this, we said one of two.
Yeah.
And then in the second one, we said two of three.
Yeah.
So
is it three of three or three of four? I don't know. It just goes to show you, though. I mean, how much there really is to learn and to talk about. When it comes to like death and burial practices, because you know there are so many different tribes and subcultures within the Philippine islands,
and it's one of those things that are sort of unifying across the different regions. I mean, marriages, yes, doesn't happen to everyone, but like birth, of course, happens to everyone. Farming, whatevs, but death, everyone's gonna die.
Yeah. What's it called? It's a universal equalizer or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, that
and the internet.
Exactly. So I didn't try to put too much structure into this part three. Basically, what I just wanted to look into is, are there any other kind of interesting practices that we observe from other tribes and cultures that we haven't covered yet? So, if you're just catching up or if you're listening to this first, just know that there's three parts so far to this series. The first one is...
Magsalita ng tapos.
I know.
We don't wanna, what's that in English?
Never... Never say never. No.
Never
that.
Say never.
That's
Yeah. But yeah. Mahirap magsalita ng tapos. Literal translation, it's hard to speak finally.
Yeah. Or don't speak like close-ended.
Yes, I guess.
We're not good translators. Oh. Sorry. So in part one of this series, we talked about the superstitions that are practiced to today when it comes to like death and mourning, right? And burial.
And Day of the Dead, like the stuff you do on the Day of the Dead.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in part two, we covered some of the interesting practices of the northern Luzon regions, right? Mm-hmm. So in particular, there are tribes, for example, that used to practice mummification.
Yes.
Right? And there's an epic story of a certain mummy that was stolen, and then the village felt that their land got cursed because the mummy was not there, and so it was brought back.
The episode I had suggested to to entitle Mummy Mia. I don't know if... Ice has been ignoring my suggestion.
It's
Mummy.
It's under review and deliberation.
We don't know what the final title will be.
We'll get back to you with the final.
But that was the working title.
So in this one, I wanted to cover, like, are there any other kind of tribal practices or subcultures that that we haven't covered yet, right? Mm-hmm. Because some of them are interesting and they do share some practices and beliefs that we've covered in the last episode. But I also found it interesting when I was looking through some of the research, because I was reading some of the history books of very early records of, like, pre-colonial practices, right? Now, obviously, these records were mostly written by
outsiders
and colonizers, and even the scholars at the time, right? Even after all of that, some of the well-known scholars were also still, like, you know, white people, basically, who were studying the country. So there's this book called Barangay, mm-hmm. and it's about 16th century Philippine culture and society. It's mostly based on Visayan accounts.
Ooh.
So this guy basically, like, put together some of the learnings from the Boxer Codex and other mm-hmm. accounts. He's a Jesuit,
okay.
I think. But so that's a large basis of this. So there's a lot.
I guess that's as far liberal as you can get with the Jesuits.
The Jesuits. Well, he unpacked that separately. But so there's a lot that is based on Visayan culture mm-hmm. that we'll talk about. There's a bit of Mindanao examples as well. But one interesting that I found here was, what is the difference in the way that they practiced, you know, mourning and burial based on your social class?
What?
So there's a lot of very specific notes on, like, oh, this is the normal practice, but if you're a datu, which is the head of the village, mm-hmm. this is how they did it instead.
Okay.
So I think I found that interesting, like, mm-hmm. just how differently they treated, like, this social, you know, class. They were kind of like royalty, basically, ish,
I guess.
In the society.
I guess the richer you are, the more time you have for.
And there was a different belief customs. As well as to, like, you know, what you gifts go? Were you endowed with, like, who would. So we'll get into, like.
Okay.
There were sacrifices questions. That were made.
I was
for
gonna
example.
Ask.
And so. Trigger warnings, I guess, if you don't like hearing about sacrifices, but there are different. They even outlined, like, oh, in this province, they tortured people like this, and in this province, they tortured people like that.
Okay.
So we'll talk about that.
By the way, Barangay, which is the title of the book, is the smallest social structure in Filipino culture. So it could be sometimes used interchangeably with village.
Yeah.
But also tribe.
So, like, a community unit,
yeah.
right? That that at least was more or less self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
They would be within a certain kind of area or boundary, yeah. and they had social structures within them, like mini economy within them.
It's named after the mm-hmm. barangay, which is a longboat.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cultures, apparently in I want to say Sumatra, no, Java. They still have the longhouses, the barangay longhouses, and it's multiple families in, like, a really, really long house.
Mm.
And that's essentially what the barangay is, like, the number of people you can fit into a longhouse, which was a boat before.
Yeah. I think we'll have a separate episode where we talk about the different social classes and social structures, because I think that's also, like, a very rich kind of territory.
We touched a little bit on it in the warrior women episode.
Yeah. When we talked about Inaginit,
mm-hmm.
and you talked about, like, the Timawa, which was, like, the warrior class, right?
Yeah.
So, on this one, I was, like, looking at this history book. There's this book that's kind of, like, designed for younger kids, or like
a
pre-teens.
Comic?
No, it's just like a mini textbook, like a historical resource,
like a young adult book, like Harry Potter.
Yeah,
for
ish,
history.
But it was like a history book.
Okay,
and it had
Harry Potter, right? Yeah,
it had different, like, aspects of pre-colonial society.
Okay,
and the title of the book is so cute. It's called A Long Time Ago.
Oh, cute.
So that's a pun because, sorry to have to explain the joke, but it's just, like, for people who don't speak Filipino, right? Lolo is grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a long time ago. They have a version of the book that focuses on money and the history of money.
Nice.
And it's called Kasaysayan. Kasaysayan means history. So it's
That's so funny.
Sorry.
It's the Cebu Pacific pun writer.
We really appreciate a good pun.
I love puns. Again, Mami Mia.
A good pun.
A good... Mami Mia is an excellent pun.
Okay. Maybe let's do a poll.
So anyway. There's two of us. Mami
Mia. I met on the Instagram page.
Okay, fine.
No, it's okay. So, I outlined some of the artifacts like related to death. And so, some of the artifacts... or the Manunggul jar, which we talked about in the last episode, and these are basically burial jars, right? Mm-hmm. So as early as the Neolithic period, they found traces of these burial jars, and it basically be different sizes. So sometimes they're very big, and you would put like a body that is folded up in a seated position inside it.
One time I went to a museum with my parents and they had Manunggul jars there, and I made my dad sit down on the floor to see if he would fit in the Manunggul jar. And he was like, no. And I was like, I'll try it. He didn't do it.
It reminds me of those people who like fit inside suitcases.
Yes. Yes.
And then you go smaller and smaller suitcases. And that's relevant because they're smaller and smaller jars.
Yes.
Because there was a very... there was a practice of secondary, like reburial, basically, secondary tertiary burial. And, you know, it was a sign of respect because you still had basically descendants who were looking after you even after you died. And so after a body went through a few years of the first burial, it was exhumed, and then they got the bones.
Can you imagine opening the jar?
Into a small burial jar. It's actually interesting because I was looking up all these different practices, and I saw this video of a certain tribe in Indonesia, and I will link it because you guys
you showed me this.
You have to watch it. It's very fascinating. I think it's a National Geographic documentary, and it's a tribe that to today practices both the practice of keeping the body in the house after the person dies.
Hi, Grandma.
And that whole idea of like after a few years you get the body out, they change the clothes. So before they even rebury, they change the clothes because she's like, oh, you know, the outfit's boring now, and so like, well, we brought him a new outfit.
It's like having a Barbie,
yeah,
but a corpse.
See, the thing is, the people who did that, so they show this clip.
Is it because they didn't have Barbies?
So these guys went to the crypt of their like grandfather or something. Mm-hmm. They brought the guy out. So the guy was still actually...
Oh, so they used to have crypts.
Yeah. So the guy was pretty well preserved, to be honest. No, because they... Sorry, one by one. They keep the body in the home for as long as they can. But eventually they have to bury it.
Okay.
Right?
That makes sense.
The body is kept. It's in like either a chair or like a bed. And then they bring them food every day, basically. And, you know, they even showed images of like the mourners just like mourning every day beside the body. Mm-hmm, just like crying. They couldn't accept it. Because so the idea is like for as long as you can afford to, you keep the body in your home. Right, and eventually you have to bury it. So they bury it, and then after a while you come back. And so they showed this clip of like these guys who went to the burial site. They brought the body out, and they brought a change of clothes. And so they changed the clothes of the guy, and they bought like flashy clothes. So it's so funny.
like some flashy
jacket, and then shades, and then they took pictures with the corpse. I'm not kidding. The corpse is upright. And they were like leaning against it and taking pictures.
Oh no. You know, it already disturbs me when people are in hospitals and then they take pictures with whoever is sick, but like while the person is unconscious. I get it if they're like awake and like, hi, you know, I'm okay. But like when the person's asleep also, and I'm like, what? That's weird. That's no consent, but okay.
Yeah.
I find it weird. But this is worse. Much worse.
I don't know why. So that's what they did. Anyway, I think it's interesting because there are those shared practices. So the idea of reburial is a sign of respect and affection.
Yeah.
Because, you know, even years after your death, you have your descendants and your progeny who's like looking after you.
I like that. I never thought of it that way. I always thought, well, because, you know,
Practical purposes also, it was a space saving mechanism. Mm-hmm. because
like less and less
they content, used to bury container. In caves, for example. Yeah. And that's where you found manunggal jars, by the way. So if more and more people died in your community, you had to make space. And so it was also a necessary practical kind of concern.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was one of the things that was there. Manunggal jars were found in like Palawan, Visayas region, right? Mm-hmm. But they also found similar ones called maitum pots. Sorry, so manunggal jar, I was trying to describe it earlier, but huge jar, could fit a person sitting down. It gets smaller and smaller. And the distinctive feature of manunggal jars is the cover, because mm-hmm. There would used to be.
I think we talked about this already.
Yeah. I'm just recapping because there's a difference with this other time. Ooh. Yeah. So there would be figures of like two people on a boat, and it usually symbolizes moving to the afterlife.
Yes.
There's a different version called the maitum pots.
Maitum pots.
And it's from the Sarangani province in Mindanao,
where they have like really good fish.
Yes. And it was a similar idea, but the pots were shaped like human figures. So sometimes it would have like genitals and stuff.
What?
So you'd have like she pots and he pots. For like men and women.
Okay.
And they're shaped like human figures. And so the distinctive feature was that. And then there would be a head on top. And they would have different expressions. So some of them were sad. Some of them were angry.
Oh my goodness.
In the accounts they said some of them looked like jealous, but I'm like, I'm not sure that's
how do you make your you face jealous carry.
I don't know, it doesn't that count. It's the author's interpretation. But yeah, some of them had breasts and genitals.
Nice.
So connote the gender.
Nice.
So, yeah.
The other
interesting artifacts that we hadn't talked about before really was death masks.
Ah, yes.
And usually these would be gold, actually.
Gold. So, Philippines used to have a ton of gold.
Yeah, so in Iloilo, they found these little mini gold discs that were used to cover the eyes and the nose.
Ooh.
And in Butuan, or Agusan del Norte, that's also in Mindanao, it was a full-on face mask. But the idea is actually linked with this whole piece of you have to cover the orifices.
Oh.
So that the soul doesn't escape before it can get transported to the afterlife.
Or so the bugs don't get into the soft things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How about this? How about the mouth?
Yeah. So sometimes they would...
How about all the orifices? Or
well, that can't save all the orifices. Like gold panties. I don't know.
Gold butt plug.
No, I don't know. Well, they didn't find any of those artifacts, so who knows? Who knows?
Oh no, this will escape. Like as a fart.
Oh no. But yeah, that was the idea. And I'm curious, like, is that what influenced the superstition that we talked about a few, like, two episodes ago of when people would put coins on someone's eyes?
Yeah, yeah.
But it was more of fair, I guess.
Yeah, that was more of fair.
Rather than covering the eyes. But yeah, that's interesting. And then the other one that was mentioned was a negrito practice, where some of them would actually bury the bodies upright. In deep perpendicular holes on the ground. So like a little slot.
That's so weird.
And then you would bury the body upright, but the head of the deceased had to be
like
left
they're on the
above
beach.
Ground.
Like they're on the beach with their family.
Yeah. And then they would cover it with a coconut shell.
I've seen this.
Yeah.
I've seen this somewhere.
And it's a little bit funny because I mean,
or
a
horrible, but okay.
No. I mean, what's funny is, you know the bunot?
Oh, yeah. Bunot is the husk of the coconut.
Yeah, so it's half a coconut. It has a husk. So a lot of the
fibers
are still there. And it is actually a traditional
floor polishing implement.
Floor polishing or floor sweeping implement. So, you know, if you guys recall it, because I know a lot of you are our age, like you and you're younger, one of the chores that they give to children is bunot, which is you basically like just
you mop, sweep the floor.
Mop or sweep the floor and then mop it with the bunot to make it shine.
You put the wax too. Sometimes you put the wax, not all the time. And then you bunot to make it shine.
Make it shine, but also get the, because we had a lot of those floorboards with like the thin wooden panels.
Yeah.
And it's to get like the dirt from in between.
Yeah, yeah. That it's like a brush. It's like a so and anyway, it's like a dance. You have when, to be coordinated. You
when I well saw that practice, all I thought was like, so it's like a bunot. Like yeah. You cover it with like a bunot.
Also, how small is the head? If you can cover it with a coconut.
But I'm wondering why that was a practice. Like and I didn't do enough research on this, but is this the same tribe that does headhunting? So is it about like because the head is so prized,
valuable, yeah.
Like, I get to keep my head even in my death or something.
My guess.
But that's a guess.
My guess is it could be this whole thing of, like, you're not always sure if people are dead yet. And so that might be a practice. Unless they're getting embalmed or whatever. It might be, like, just in case, you know, we're covering it because so animals don't get to it. But just in case you're still alive, you're like, hello, I'm still here.
Yeah, that was like, still here.
I'm so here, and this coconut is delicious. Maybe.
Let's see. Let's verify that.
Let's ask some.
Let's ask Ambit. Sir Ambit. Ambit was my teacher.
So I know. He's very active on social media.
He is, because yeah. I think he has like a YouTube channel he started.
Ooh.
Yeah, so that's nice. Exciting.
We'll have him over as a guest.
We talked a lot about actual practices with regard to burial and mourning, right? We actually haven't talked about what happens before.
Before you're dead?
So there are a lot of ritual practices and superstitions.
If you're like almost dying?
Associated with like, why did this person die? What caused it? Or like practices that sometimes Babaylan did, like rituals they did to try to call back a departed soul when they felt like this person is close to death but not really dead. Mm-hmm. So like, how do we do it? So in the book Barangay, as I said, they noted down the idea of some deaths could have been caused by aswang or monsters, right? So, because obviously people would sometimes think that they're supernatural causes. Because
it's sudden. To death. Yeah.
Sudden or a bit.
Or they behaved weirdly.
Or not even sudden, because sometimes they feel like if a person is dying slowly, then the aswang, who they believe are flesh eaters, was slowly eating
consuming
their liver.
Ew.
So there's this...
there's but also this, why the liver is so gruesome.
There's this like phrase, kinibta ng atay. So the liver is slowly being chipped away at.
Oh no.
And that's because aswang love liver. And so they're slowly eating away at the person.
What if the aswang has an iron deficiency?
Yeah, it's, but why is he getting it from like eat a
maybe
pig?
Maybe just have Guinness na lang.
Eat a pig.
Yeah, that's true.
Something. But if they believe that someone died because an aswang ate them or attacked them, and that one of their village members were aswang, they would put that person to death.
How do they know?
It was like a witch trial.
How do they know?
Remember our Manananggal episode?
If
where
it's a new person.
Someone who's isolated. It reminds me of the witch trials, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so if this guy says into social classes, but if the victim was a datu, mm-hmm. And a datu is like the head of the village, basically. Mm-hmm. Typically, a political or a war leader.
Yeah, a war leader. But depends what's valuable to the barangay. Sometimes it's someone who is. Sometimes it's hereditary, but yeah. Some tribes elect a datu. Mm. So sometimes it's a war leader, someone who's learned. But
or
also,
sometimes it's someone who helps with the trade. Mm-hmm. Also,
someone who speaks another language, so it's well connected. Yeah.
But they also believed, obviously, they associated some, like, supernatural benefits to the datu. Because the datu was, like, the mini king in their mini kingdom. That's yes. kind of the function
yes.
That they
there
serve.
There are still datus today. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, as I say, datu is a well-known last name, by the way.
Yeah. You mean datu, her yeah. co-worker. Yeah.
Sorry, so if the
if you're a datu and
keep going on these tangents, you got in the you middle got of aswang. Sentences.
ADHD podcast.
If the victim is a datu, the whole family of the suspected aswang is put to death.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, poor guy.
I know. Like,
I know.
You, there's not even any notice of like a trial. Like, how would you know? They would just like take it for granted. Like, yeah, this person is aswang.
No, you know what? It's someone who's different. Someone who is contrarian. It's someone who sometimes it's someone who's,
the social function was like to keep people who were
outsiders
or had like different values than the community, you know. They also thought that if you fast, so this is a different belief, if there was a monitor lizard under your house, that is a sure sign of impending death.
Is it like a bayawa? Or is it the same? Yeah. We always had that in our house, but then again, I did have a lot of relatives who died.
So here's what you should have done. You know what you should have done?
What?
You kill the monitor lizard, you enshroud it and bury it as if it's a human being. And
like a substitute.
Yeah, so it's believed that that could be enough to like offer their life in exchange.
Can I tell you a tangent?
Sure.
I'm a monitor lizard. So my dad, we stayed in this place, when my dad was in the military, we stayed in this place called Kalipayan, which is like Freedom. It was like Imelda's.
Where is it?
In Cebu, in Mactan Air Base. Mm. And it was like the, it's like a, I guess like a mini hotel. And it that's where Imelda would stay when she was in power, inside the base. Shangri-La had just opened. It wasn't really a thing to have hotels then. But this was like, I would say, mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
So they always said it was haunted and everything. My mom saw ghosts. Sometimes the grand piano would move across the floor. Anyways, so there was a bayawak on the ceiling. And the caretaker said, there's a bayawak on the ceiling. It's bad luck. It's bad luck. And so my dad said, look, this is what we did. We always have bayawaks in Batangas. And so he talked about this trap that they would do in like super detail, which is essentially you get a drum, like a steel drum, and then you sort of, you don't fully open it, but you cut the opening in a way like a star, and then you would push all the tines in, push it in.
Okay.
So from the outside, it's smooth, but in the inside, it's sharp.
Okay.
Gets? Then you would put a piece of rotting meat inside to lure the bayawak. Bayawak would go in, but will not be able to go out.
Okay.
Because of the tines. The next day, the bayawak is gone.
Did it go inside the trap?
No.
Where did it go?
It was just gone. Okay. And it's like a pretty easily monitorable property, and the bayawak had been there for days and days, and the caretaker didn't know what to do with it. And he's like, sir, the bayawak is gone.
Okay.
And so my dad thinks that he heard us and heard our evil plan. and like... cut like, his losses before. Like, before
I'm not saying
it's like
that.
No one is dying in this house. I'm just going. I'm just leaving. They are evil people. This general guy is horrible. My dad was like, and then you eat it. I'm like, no.
Is it good though?
I've had it. It's good. Maango. It's what's maango?
Gamey.
It's gamey. It's very gamey. It's kind
for
of like
a reptile.
Yeah. I like it more than crocodile, if that makes a difference. But I like it more than snake. But yeah, that doesn't say much.
I know. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, it's nasty.
If faced with an option of those three things, yeah, why not? Yeah.
Bayawaks are scary. They're like mini dragons.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they eat chickens, so. Anyways,
but
tangent.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Sorry. Related to, hey, no one died.
That's good. Because it was over your house, not under it.
Oh. And it wasn't even our house. It was just a hotel we were staying
at. It wasn't under the establishment, so that's fine.
It has to be under.
Yeah, so if it's under the house.
Okay, we've never had one under our house. One time we had a carabao go in our basement.
Okay.
Because our house was being constructed and we had a basement. You've been to our house in Batangas.
No, I haven't.
There's an upstairs and a downstairs. And the downstairs is pretty big.
Yeah.
And while we were making the house, the downstairs was easily accessible by a ramp. And that's where the builders would live. And then we have a TV there and stuff. So one day, all the workers were out. And then when they were coming in for lunch or whatever, or for the day, to nap for the day, there was a carabao watching TV. And they didn't know what to do.
Sometimes carabaos are scary, yeah. Sometimes because sometimes they can attack you.
He had horns. But they were like, first they slowly backed away. Uh-huh. And so what they did, they cut power to the TV.
Okay.
Because it was one of those...
The carabao was watching TV.
Yeah. He was watching Eat Bulaga. and then I know because I asked what was the carabao watching. It was Eat Bulaga. And so they cut the power to the TV.
The carabao was just bored and there's
and
no
then he
Netflix.
Just wandered out.
There's no Netflix on the field.
No.
He just wanted to watch something.
I don't know where he came from. We don't have a carabao. But yeah, sorry for the animal tangent.
Anyway, so if it was believed that you know, you were dying, etc., you were close to the brink of death, they did this ritual that which was intended to call back a recently departed soul.
And it was kind of
like
back.
A desperate attempt to like bring them back. It's called the pag-uli.
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 Uli
means to return.
Uli does, or again, right?
So in that
in Bisaya.
In Bisaya, I think it means to come back or to go home.
Like uwi.
Yeah. So they put a coconut shell of water on your stomach. And then they kind of rotate it, and then the shaman, or I guess a babaylan, would say uli uli kalag, which means come back soul.
Because
they call the soul the kalag, right? In the case of a datu, they would do that ritual, but on top of that, they would also sacrifice some slaves, because the hope is
slaves?
That...
I was not ready for that. I was like, chickens? Some slaves?
No. Wait. They would sacrifice... Sorry, I should have prepped you.
While I was drinking.
In the case of a datu, they would sacrifice some slaves in the hopes that they would be accepted in his stead. Because what they thought was... So when someone dies, it means that an ancestor spirit, someone who died recently, is calling them away.
Like sundo.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, like sundo, which means to fetch someone. And so they would sacrifice the slaves because they believe that, you know, maybe this person would...
just be as good as the other one?
Yeah. You know, the reason they also did this was because they believed, see, a datu fights for us.
Yes.
A datu leads like battles or skirmishes so that we could get more, because that's how they expanded you know, their villages and stuff like that. And so they also believed that as a result, the datu became a natural target for vengeful spirits men that he had like beaten or vanquished.
Yeah.
And so that's why there was these extra steps needed to kind of save him. And so sometimes if they didn't have enough slaves, they would go on expeditions that they called itatanum.
Itatanum.
And the intent is to take captives from other communities to sacrifice them.
Oh no!
Yeah. So this is where I get a bit...
How do they stop?
What?
When do they know to stop? If the datu just stays dead?
Uh-huh.
If the datu just...
I think the shaman would probably like interpret for them.
Yeah.
And sometimes like someone, they would just die and then, so it's an offering, just bring them to the heaven or something. The book talked about different ways that they executed the sacrifices.
Oh
no,
okay.
So this is something of a trigger warning. So in Cebu, they used to have spears on the edge of the house porch.
Okay.
They would spear the slaves at the edge of the house's porch. And this is important because they dug graves right at the bottom. After the porch, so that after they speared the slaves, it will be immediately go to the grave.
That's expeditious.
Very expeditious. In Carigara, they would put the bodies prostrate on like the floor or like the beach area, and they would roll a boat on top of the body.
Oh no!
It's horrible.
And squish them. Squish death by squishing. But then the beach is sandy, no?
Huh?
The beach is sandy, so they
maybe it was a hard beach or something.
Yeah, I guess.
So it wasn't in Boracay.
No, not the powder baby powder wasn't fine beach.
It wasn't a white sand fluffy beach.
Squish.
In Butuan, they would bind the slaves to a cross.
Okay.
And then you would torture them with like bamboo spikes all day, so basically like prick and like stab them.
Man, I am bummed then, when I'm like putting meat on a skewer and I get like
then
a
you
little,
hit yourself
I get a little
or like you're
splinter,
doing embroidery.
And I was like, this is the most horrible thing in the world.
Try being a slave in that era.
Probably would have been.
They were bound to a cross, they were tortured all day with bamboo spikes, and then finally at the end they would be run through with a spear and then cast into the river, cross and all.
Okay.
There was an account of like what's this?
It sounds very similar to what they would do to witches as well.
Exactly. There was an account of a certain chieftain, I think in Bohol. Was it Bohol? It was like a seafaring community. And
Bajau?
No. Bohol is it.
Yeah.
And he was, so he was the Datu, and he needed, because sometimes even if it's not to like appease the spirits or whatever, they would send you slaves as part of like your retinue.
Okay.
To like, you know,
to as your to entourage. Help you, to help you.
Yeah,
in the
because they believe
very
that,
Egyptian.
They believe that, you know, you would need like
servants.
Resources and all when you move to the afterlife. And so he was famously known as someone who was buried in his Karakoa, which is the traditional boat, with his 70 oarsmen, 70 slaves as his oarsmen. The intent is, you know, he wants to still use his boat in the afterlife and he would need oarsmen to go with him. And so they killed the slaves as well.
And then they just pushed it out?
Hmm?
They just pushed out the boat?
Yeah. I don't know, actually.
Or was it like Norse
the,
style?
The accounts like, don't say. I don't want to represent what the accounts say. The accounts will say what happened to the boat afterwards, whether it was buried or sent off into the sea. I think either option would be.
It lands in like Guam. And then you're like, what is this?
Who is this?
This is horrible.
Yeah.
So
that was.
Wait, tangent. Sorry. Have you ever heard of the Salt Mary Celeste?
What?
The Salt Mary Celeste.
What's that?
It's a boat. I think it's a British boat.
Okay.
That was found floating with no one alive on board. Like, just, it was completely intact. And there was no, like, there was no sense of violence. There was food there. Perfectly working navigational system. There was
when was water. This
in like some like pre America era. It's called the Salt Mary Celeste, and they said it's haunted. You know, so it's but it's like the it's kind of a cool boat name.
Salt Mary Celeste. That's cool.
It's cool. So I'm thinking like
actually, sorry, another tangent. But recently in Japan, there was an earthquake that washed up a lot of World War II boats.
I saw this. Yeah. Yeah. Very cool.
Very scary too. It's like that. Because it was like, I think it was boats from like one of the biggest naval battles of World War II. And so a lot of people died.
Did you see in, boats. Again, tangent to your tangent, in Unsolved Mysteries, there's an episode on the recent tsunami in Japan. I think it was Tohoku, I'm not sure. But there was a monk there who said that there were still a lot of spirits who were like walking around and didn't know that they were dead yet.
Yes.
Because the tidal wave happened so fast.
Yeah.
The tsunami happened so fast. Is it the same as the tidal wave? But anyways.
Oh, that's so sad.
But I know, it's kind of sad more than scary, right?
But that's like, you know, a lot of movies like Sixth Sense and
they don't know their dad.
What's a Nicole Kidman movie where
Los Otros, The Others.
The Others. Where it was her and her kids and she was so scared she didn't realize they were the
They were the ones. They were the ghosts.
Yeah. Spoiler.
Sorry.
Sorry, I'd like to watch that.
It's been around for 20 years.
If anyone hasn't seen the plot twist of Sixth Sense, I don't know what to tell you.
I got ruined for me.
Huh?
That got ruined for me.
But you don't mind spoilers, right?
Yeah, but this is a really good
one. Yeah, that's one of the necessary, like, you really have to not know.
Okay, anyways, super tangents.
So many tangents.
Super tangents.
So, I think one of the other interesting things is we talked about how they would prepare a body for mummification in part two, right?
The episode called Mummy Mia.
That's not what that Respectfully, that's not what the episode is called. Anna was like, let's see. Hasn't been uploaded yet, so let's see. But they also had like certain practices with regard to like how to prepare the body for burial. So they would actually, you know, have a ritual haircut and grooming for the body. And so Pigafetta was one of like the first people to
a scribe of
chronicle the, you know, the first couple of accounts of the Philippine Islands. He attended the funeral where he saw that while they were doing the ritual where the body was perfumed and groomed and stuff like that, the widow of the dead person lay on top of the body, mouth to mouth.
What?
It doesn't say why. Is it so that you prevent the soul from escaping while it's happening? I don't know, but the widow laid there on top of the body, mouth to mouth, while they did all of the preparations, which...
What if he died from, like, COVID? They should get it.
I don't know what to tell you. Yeah. And then after, as we talked about earlier, they would, you know, put jewelry, like the gold masks, and they would put as much gold as possible.
Nice.
Because again, you want to make sure that you are giving them as many resources as possible to have a good life in the afterlife. So aside from the gold masks we talked about, they would also put as much gold as possible in the mouth.
Oh.
And then they would... Some of them would, like, enshroud the body so that you'd have, like, I don't know, 5-10 blankets. Mm-hmm. And so they would put gold in each and every layer.
Sweet.
Of the blankets.
Mm-hmm.
And so, obviously, that opened up a lot of...
Grave robbing.
Grave robbers, right? Yeah. And then the... So they would hold the wake, right? And the wake would actually last as long as the family can supply food and drink.
Oh, makes sense.
So...
Yeah.
That's fine. But while the wake was happening, the family... Like, the widower and, like, the first-degree family members...
Direct family members.
Yeah, would be secluded.
Oh!
Like, at, like, somewhere. Uh-huh. And it would be, like, there would be, like, a white kind of cloth or white hangings, like, mm-hmm. separating them from the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And then, there were accounts, and this is why I found it fascinating, there were accounts of, like, professional mourners or crying ladies.
Ah, yes.
Right? And,
And these were the people who became actors later.
They were generally old women.
Yeah. What else would you do?
And they would, like, keep crying. The intent was obviously to show, like, how well-loved and well-respected the person was, that there would be so much mourning at their funeral. So
I thought that was a Chinese thing, but no. I guess it was a pre-colonial thing. Yeah.
So wow. They would be, like, you know, it's characterized by a lot of wailing, but they'd also eulogize. So part of what the mourners do would be to talk about, like, the accomplishments of the dead.
Oh.
Now, obviously, this is very sexist, but they would talk about, like, the bravery and generosity of the men,
mm-hmm.
or the beauty and industry of the women. But there's also one part, and I really want to probe on this further. They would, part of the eulogy, and again, this is the eulogy, is the sexual fulfillment of either the man or the woman.
Like, he got a lot of orgasms?
I don't know what that means.
Or gave a lot of orgasms.
Is it progeny? Like, oh, you know, sexual fulfillment.
He liked anal. And hence here is his golden butt plug.
She came twice. I don't know.
Oh my god.
This needs to be investigated further.
She didn't need to pretend.
She didn't fake it. It was really good.
She's very flexible.
So, the sexual fulfillment of either the man or the woman.
Best BJs in town.
So, yeah. So, it's funny because there was a movie, right? With Sharon Cuneta.
Yes, Crying Ladies.
Crying Ladies.
Yeah, it was really good.
That was cute.
I really liked it. With Eric Kison. I don't know, is he gay or not? But yeah, but that was a really good movie.
Mm, mm.
Crying Ladies. But the reason I thought it was Chinese, because in Crying Ladies, Sharon was hired by a Chinese family. And that
she maybe it also is Chinese.
Maybe. Yeah. But I haven't seen it in any other modern culture of Crying Ladies. It would be so good.
What?
I would be so good as a crying lady.
I know, you would make an amazing crying lady.
I can cry. I can make myself cry.
Imagine if, like, the family was like, okay, so this is what you want me to tell about the disease. And then also, can you please emphasize the sexual fulfillment part? Because, you know.
Yeah.
This is really important for him.
There's message tracking for them.
They're like, he was really big.
Here are the content buckets. Here are the content buckets. He's really good with his tongue.
And his hands.
I got pregnant right away.
We're going to put an explicit warning now. Not the sacrifice,
this
part.
No. No, the explicit warning is sexual content and gore. and big lizard traps.
Yeah. So that would happen during your week. And then they also talked about the differences in how they...
Didn't you say before that there were mummies that they would be preserved with erections? In like the previous episode.
Wait, was that you
or was
that.
Or was I imagining?
Was that your fantasy? Oh no!
No, I think you did. That some mummies would be preserved with erections.
I don't recall saying it.
Or was it because I was watching The Mummy?
And you were like, oh, Brendan Fraser is so hot.
Yeah.
And then the mixed up your feelings.
Yeah, I think so.
Death and sex. Okay, well, we can unpack that.
We can.
But not today.
I've been having weird dreams lately, but okay.
So, there were also differences in the way that they buried people from different social classes.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, for poor people, they said that you were basically just wrapped in banana leaves. And
that's... Ano ka biko?
Because the practice was they would enshroud. So normally, you would be enshrouded. So you would be like not wrapped in fabric. Blankets, right? Oh. And then they would put like little...
Ornaments
or worldly possessions in between the layers of blankets. And then you would be buried inside what they call a longon, which is...
That sounds familiar.
Which is a coffin that is hewn from a hardwood, typically. Sometimes the ipil tree, right? And the idea is the entire coffin is hewn out of it. And even the lid from that one tree trunk.
Oh, that's nice.
And then they would seal it with like some resin.
Mm-hmm.
And that seal is important because a lot of times they would keep the coffins in the house. So you would need that kind of seal. So that would be a standard for like a normal person. But
and then it's now your table.
Yeah. No! But if you were poor and you couldn't afford that.
Right.
Then you would be wrapped in banana leaves.
That's and so sad.
Put
you're
in
like a kanin.
A simple casket of like thin boards or bamboo.
Oh, no.
So yeah. And obviously if you're datu or a rich person, prominent person, your longan would be much more intricate.
Mm-hmm.
And typically
is
actually,
it a different tree?
No. It would be basically a hardwood. But it was also typical of the datu or other prominent people to actually carve out fanciful designs on their own coffins while they're alive.
This is similar to the hanging coffins in Sagada, where you also make your own coffins before you die.
Sometimes, yeah. Or even, I mean, to be honest, like pharaohs commissioned and built pyramids
long before
in their lifetimes.
Yeah, for
their own use. So. So yeah, and so again, as I said, that was important because they would keep the coffins unburied in the house.
Why?
Sometimes the corpse would also be, the body cavities would be filled with sap. There's so they put buyo sap inside, and then as I said,
and then it becomes amber
and mouthpieces,
and then it's preserved, and then you can make a dinosaur out of it.
There was this interesting practice. I don't know how widespread this was, but apparently sometimes they would put an axe handle in the coffin of what they would call a bingit, and a bingit is a woman who had known no other man than her husband.
Okay.
Because the idea is, like, a hole in the axe handle can fit only the axe head that's made for it.
Okay.
And I'm just like, did they put the axe head on the man's coffin? They didn't say. But
so it's like a...
I don't know. Is it a romantic thing?
It seems like a symbolism thing.
Yeah, maybe.
Right? Like, it's just like, it's a... It's a metaphor for her vajayjay.
Exactly.
It's only been one.
Because
guy.
It's an axe hole in the
so
in
the only axe head would fit is her husband's axe head. As if the vajayjay is not an elastic part of your body.
Exactly.
Okay.
But, okay, so So that was the coffin, right? Mm-hmm. And then they would, most of the time, they would bury these people in, like, graveyards that are, like, outside the city limits.
Yes.
Or sometimes they would put them in caves or small islands. So, mm-hmm. actually, there was an account there was an account where, I think it was Magellan, he went to Homonhon Island. And he found it uninhabited. And then he realized that that was the case because that's where they would bury people. And so no one lived there.
A cemetery island.
People believed that it was haunted. Yeah, a cemetery island.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, as I said, in the case of datus and shamans, they would not be in the far-flung burial grounds. They would be kept under the houses sometimes.
Under the house.
And in the case of... So this I hadn't heard before. And we need to circle back to this when we talk about babaylan. Mm-hmm. But guess what they did to babaylans who died? Where and how would they be buried?
As their new dining table.
What's your guess?
In the bed. Under the bed.
The babaylan would be exposed to the elements in the branches of the balete tree where they established spiritual contact.
They're like in there in the vines?
Exposed to the elements.
Like trese.
Yeah, so you kind of like recall those images of like people were like hanging on the balete tree.
Yeah. And sometimes when you're passing the balete tree, I try not to look. You know, there's this human instinct to find faces and things, right? And so sometimes when I see a balete tree, I try not to look too closely because you can almost see a face in there. And what is there someone hanging?
So sometimes they would put the datu's body in a tomb, right? Okay. And this is a super interesting practice. There would be one slave who would be assigned to guard that tomb for the rest of his life.
It's like because obviously, if all of the
riches of the datu were buried with him, it would keep attracting grave robbers, right?
Just so, one guy, no shifting.
So there would be like this slave, and they would be called a dayo. Mm-hmm. And they would be stationed at the tomb of the datu for the rest of his life. And he's supposed to be there to guard the tomb against robbers and aswang.
Okay.
I like how you were like, aswang, okay. I get that.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
And he had a special privilege. Ooh. So it's actually a privileged position for slaves. It was an enviable position for slaves. Because he would therefore have the right to feed himself off anybody's field.
Oh!
Because he's doing a big service to the community.
Kind of like a lighthouse guy.
Yeah. And so, there was an interesting like saying that men with like permanent positions, so I guess like the equivalent of like non-contractual.
Yeah.
Like when you move from contractual to like permanent employment. So men with permanent positions, they would joke na, we're like dayo.
Okay. Because they're like jobs for life.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we're secure.
It's like
now.
A tenured position.
So that would be the lucky slave because there would also be slaves, and we talked about this earlier, who would be sacrificed at the datu's death.
I know. Right? How do you get to be a dayo? Do you have special qualifications? You don't sleep so much?
That would be
much?
Interesting. Right? What's like the application process?
Can stay awake a lot. really good with like the stingray whip to fight off aswang.
Yeah, has to be a trained aswang hunter.
Yeah. But also, like, what if he gets to be really, really old? If it's a thingy for life.
Maybe it's something that you just, like, turn over or something.
I guess.
Because the other equivalent is, like, ironically, the datu's most trusted personal assistant. They would typically have, like, that one slave who's, like, dedicated to them their whole lives.
Yeah, his valet or something.
It's called an atubang. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, because the datu needs the atubang with him the entire time, the atubang would have to die when the datu dies.
I get it.
And be buried with them.
I get it.
So
the dayo has to be someone who's like really trustworthy, but the datu didn't know. That he didn't really know.
He's just like there on the sidelines. So like, you're good, but you're not that good.
Yeah,
you're not
the main. You can't cook. Button. You can't cook. You can't iron clothes. You can't do my toenails.
Is that what the atubang does? I don't know.
I don't know.
I guess, yeah.
You can't make first appointments on Outlook Calendar. You can't book flights.
Nakakainis.
Hey, that's a skill, ah. Scheduling. The amount of time I spend
it's a just big
friggin'
skill.
Scheduling shit. Rant.
And it was funny because, like, when it came to morning, so obviously, that would, again, have special privileges. Because typically, if it's, like, a normal, if it's a normal, it's the death of a normal person or average person in the community, there would be, like, 3 days of fasting and silence and, like...
Silence?
For the widowers.
Okay.
So they would fast and or the be widows. Completely silent.
Yeah.
For 3 days, and they would not bathe, or they would not comb.
This is
or
nasty.
Sometimes they would shave their hair and their eyebrows as a special sign of grief.
Some people don't have that at all. I mean, alopecia.
And then, for some weird reason, that until the full mourning period ended, they did not eat cooked food.
Ew! And, oh, but they can have bananas. You essentially become vegan for 3 days.
Yeah, that's fine. Raw vegan diet.
No, you're fruitarian.
And then family
Did
members.
Did I tell you that a friend of ours, he said, I'll tell you later who it is, or I'll bleep it.
Where are you going? Oh, recycling.
Oh, so one of our friends, we'll bleep the name, but once said that he, because we were talking about diets, right? He said he survived 2 weeks without eating anything and only consuming air.
What?
Yeah.
That's a joke.
And he had to work up to it, you know. He was doing 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, and finally he got 14 days with just air.
Not even water.
Not even water.
That, first of all, that's not
that's
biological.
Impossible. That's what I said.
It's
I
not
said,
biologically
it's impossible.
Possible.
It's impossible.
You're going to die.
Yeah. 3 days without water, you're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
What did he say?
He's like, yeah, no, I really did it. I'm like, do you have proof? Do you have like a doctor's note or something? No, he didn't. He just said it. Because I said like, yeah, I haven't had carbs in a long time. And he's like, well, one time, I only survived on air.
That's so annoying. So in the case of Adatu's death, the whole community was placed under strict mourning called Pumaraw. So basically, the whole community, nobody could wear colored clothing. This is specific. They can't climb palm trees.
Oh no!
Or fish in certain
streams.
But
what I love climbing palm trees.
And then whenever, and your spear, when you're carrying your spear around, it has to be pointed
down.
And then your side arms.
I think that's just smart.
Yeah. And there would be mournful silence. So the entire community had to be super quiet. And if they're not, if they break the taboo, even if it's their animals making that sound, so let's say the dog barked or the cock crowed, the families would be enslaved as punishment.
That is shitty.
I think it's just a way to get more slaves.
That's true. That's true. Or right? More dogs.
And then the mourning period only ended with the taking of human life. I don't know what that means.
So it's a subjective stretch of time. Unless someone else dies or someone else is killed.
I think it's a ritual sacrifice. Like at the end of it, they would sacrifice or something. That's my guess.
Yeesh.
That's my guess.
I guess that's why they have so many people, because they have so many sacrifice things to
so
do.
I think, and it was the same thing that they observed if the death was like a death of violence or drowning or suspected sorcery. They would sacrifice either a human life or like a wild boar or a deer. And they said that men charged with responsibility for family honor would tie strings of irritating vines around their arms or neck and swear not to remove them or partake of certain foods until they had completed their duty. So let's say in your family, someone died of violence or drowning or suspected sorcery. You would have to do that as like the man who's holding the family honor. Until
I'm the man who's holding the family honor. That's my dad.
So.
That's Brian, man. Ha, finally, a benefit to being a woman. Thank you. I knew the Philippines was good for something.
Yeah. But there, so that was the general practice. Mm-hmm. And I think what the other part that I found interesting was the idea of the afterlife. So this would be the last part.
Yeah.
So I think the last part of this whole kind of series is just the idea of the afterlife in that kind of culture or community, right? So they believe that the departing soul was delivered to the land of the dead. And the land of the dead was called Saad or Sulad.
Saad or Sunad.
And you would get there by boat. Mm-hmm. And on the shore, the soul or the kalag mm-hmm. would be met by relatives who had predeceased him.
Yay.
And then they accepted him only if he was well ornamented with gold jewelry.
Oh.
And that's why it was so important to give like baon or like, you like know, a, give them enough.
Like fair.
Yeah,
but what if
fair.
You're poor and you're only wearing banana yeah. leaves?
If he was rejected, he remained permanently in Sulad unless reprieved by the god Pandaki in response to rich paganito or rituals mm-hmm. offered by his survivors.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, so in Panay, they believe that the boatman who fared the dead was Magwayan, remember?
Yes.
In the story.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, was the first guy who died, came back to life, his wife got moved on, and then he went back.
Isn't that...
Padugayan.
Padaguan.
Padaguan. Who's Magwayan?
He's a boatman.
Okay. It's familiar. Okay.
Okay. They also believe that in the afterlife, married couples were reunited to continue accustomed activities.
Again, what if you had like five
what
wives?
What if you married again, right?
Yeah. What if you married... See, this is a thing. My grandmother, her first husband was her sister's husband. So her sister, she had an older sister. And she married this man. They didn't have any kids. The older sister passed away. And so the guy already knew my grandmother's family. And so he said, I like this family. They're cool. I'll just marry the sister. So he married my grandmother. And then they had two kids. And then he passed away when she was 27.
Mm-hmm.
And then my grandmother met my granddad, who was her getaway driver when she was a smuggler during World War II. And so they got married. They had six other kids in the afterlife.
Who does she hang out with?
Who does she hang out with?
Or maybe the latest husband?
Is it my granddad? Or is it her first husband?
Or maybe all of them.
Or maybe all of them. Maybe they're like a foursome of swimmers.
Sorry, just to complete the thought, right? So the married couples reunited to continue the activity. So they would farm together, fish together, spin or weave.
And other activities.
Etc. And they would spend, this is how they would spend their days for nine lifetimes. Being reborn each time smaller than the last. Until in their final reincarnation, they were buried in a coffin the size of a grain of rice.
They're reincarnated into smaller and smaller beings?
Yes.
That's like the reverse of the concept of reincarnation.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to be reborn in the next life as a Wagyu cow. So,
but they believe that babies, so if a baby died, because the baby never engaged in adult activities, it actually did not have an afterlife.
Oh.
Because there's nothing to do. They never learned it.
So the belief is when you die, you stay the age that you were when you died.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
Or they come back as Chanak. So.
Huh?
They come back as Chanak.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Episode 3?
3, I think.
Eat Me Chanak. Baby One More Time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you don't want Mommy Me. Mommy Me is so cool.
But that's interesting. And probably in a separate... in a future episode, like a few months later, because we have a few banked, we can talk about like what was the idea of like heaven, like were there different layers to it in some of the beliefs, etc.
Yeah. Is it like Dante, where like different people who did different things
there
go
are,
to different
there are,
places?
There are certain myths that talk about like I think 5 or 7 layers of heaven.
Ooh.
Or 5 or 7 layers of the earth, and I think we're in like the middle or the bottom layer or something like that.
We're in Middle Earth.
We're in Middle Earth. Tolkien. It's funny because when I was reading some of the accounts or the quotes from the book, it was said that most of the pre-colonial Visayans didn't believe that like the underworld was really evil. It's not like a hell.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons they said that it's not evil or hell is because it's cooler down there than it is up here.
That's
so it's
true.
A better place. Why would it be a worse place?
Well,
it's much cooler underground.
Carlos Celdran in his tour used to say that Well, because, you know, he says, like, you know, the Filipino language is like half Malay, half Southeast Asian, and then half Spanish. And you they can choose words and adapt the words that exist in concepts. So there are words for heaven in pre-colonial Philippine, langit, you know. And then, but hell is impierno, which is a Spanish word. Because conceptually, we didn't really have that concept of punishment in the afterlife. Mm. And it's more of just, it's just a different existence.
Yeah, that's true.
That was his hypothesis. I don't know if it holds true.
Yeah, because we don't really have... but where does Sitan live? Because remember in the Tagalog mythology, Sitan's like the evil guy.
But I think when they say... Does he live in the underworld? I don't think he lives in the underworld. I think he's just like...
Or is that a Catholic,
I think it's a... Yeah, I think it's a Catholic reimagining. I think it's similar to how like fairies and encantos are in a different world of darkness or whatever. And so there's like, but it doesn't necessarily seem to me like it's a place you go after a certain time. Yeah. I think it's something that coexists on this on a different plane.
Maybe. I found that account of like reincarnation interesting because I think it was the first time I encountered the idea of reincarnation in
rivers in Filipino culture.
At least it's one of the few like accounts I found of reincarnation, because as we said, especially for the Katagalugan, right, in the Tagalog area, it wasn't really the idea of like you move to like a different world to do different things. Your soul was still here, and that's why we would keep like praying to the ancestors and the Anitos. And we get much more in-depth on Anitos in
an upcoming episode that we already did, but we just haven't aired because seasonality.
so there, that is we're gonna keep it to 3 episodes for now because there's
next year.
There's a lot, guys. We hope that you appreciate the richness of the belief. As Anima said, death is the universal equalizer. So each and every one of us have, you know, witnessed death, will experience death. There's so much that you can learn from how people would, you know, interpret what causes death, would think of like in terms of how they would prepare a body for death, and what they believed the dead would go to, right? And even worshiping the dead ancestors after.
I think the whole thing about all the processes that happen around death, whether it's what happens before and what happens after, like one thing I noticed whenever I would go to a wake of someone's parents or whoever who had died, or if I'm in a wake myself with my relatives, there's a lot of talk of their lives and a lot of talks about even how they died, even the whole process of like, oh, so we went to the hospital 2 weeks ago and then this happened and that happened. And objectively, it's so weird. It's very strange that really, isn't this a personal detail, blah, blah, blah. But then I realized that it's like the modern version of what we used to do, which is processing. It's just processing the grief and processing the loss. And it's like we said in a previous episode, right? Like you die 2 deaths. The Native Americans used to say that you die 2 deaths. The first death is your actual death. And the second death is when someone speaks your name for the last time. And so I think these rituals are like sort of a psychological coping mechanism.
Yeah.
For everyone to just like deal with it.
And I mean, yes, it does sound weird because in other cultures, in other countries, you probably would be told that it's very insensitive to ask
how did they
the
die?
Bereaved like so much about the dead and what happened, because it's a painful process. But I think for us, it's like our way of showing our concern. Like, how are you? How did it happen? Is everything okay?
And I'm so surprised at that because it's like, talagang to detail. Like,
We were in the hospital at 8 p.m. and then this happened and then he said this. And it links with a lot of our superstitions and beliefs, right?
Yeah.
There would always be stories about like, but you know, I think his spirit is here because this happened recently.
I saw a black butterfly the other day.
So my uncle died a few months ago. May he rest in peace. But my mom would like, sometimes I catch up with my mom and she's going to be listening to this at some point.
So. Hi, Potita!
Hi, mom. she told me, yeah, you know, like, what did she say? She talked about how my cousins were, like, playing around with, like, my uncle's safe. Because he used to have, like, a safe for his, like, personal belongings and documents.
Yeah.
And they were playing around with it, my cousins. And then suddenly they heard it beep and it was locked. And they couldn't open it.
Baka naubos na lang
ng battery. And then eventually, I think my mom went to the room and she was like, basically saying, like, oh, will you let me open it or whatever? And it opened for her.
Aww.
So, yeah, that was one story. And then she also talked about how, like, these two boy cousins, because they're really naughty, they were joking around that they were going to mess up my uncle's car, because he really loves his car. He always takes care of his car. They were joking around, like, yeah, they were going to mess up with it. And then it beeped.
Like, alarm.
Yeah. And
so that's part of like,
it's part of like, you know, just the stories we like to tell. A part of us really wants to believe that these things happen, right?
Well, because Brian said
it's our way of feeling like they're really still with us in some way.
Brian said that Stanley Kubrick said when he was making The Shining that it's an optimistic film, because wouldn't it be great if there was still something after death? Right, and that's all. And these rituals, all of these are not morbid, but they're optimistic things.
Yeah.
Because if there was just nothing after death, that would be pretty depressing, right? That you'd have to say goodbye, like, whatever, forever.
I think in a way, like, it's kind of the reason there's also so much, you know, mythology and lore just about the afterlife is because it's kind of hard to conceptualize the idea that after death, there's nothing else.
Yeah.
Like, this is the absolute final end of things. There's nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah.
And our minds are like, that cannot be.
We cannot compute.
There must be something. Yeah. There must be a point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a whole entire philosophical debate.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah.
It explains why we're so fascinated with ghost stories.
Yes.
We want to believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if there is an unhappy ghost spirit, that means there are happy ghosts and spirits.
Yeah.
So it's it's an optimistic way of looking at things.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that's it. We hope you enjoyed.
Happy November.
We hope you enjoyed this series. Mm-hmm. And we hope you found it interesting. You learned something new.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if we have missed certain things, or if you know from wherever you are any specific practices that you think are interesting, we haven't heard of, we would love to hear it, sincerely. And I would love to have a follow-up to this episode at some point in the future. And, you know, we'd be great if we could put some of those stories in there. That'd be exciting. So, so this is, it's not called Mummy Mia. We're going to figure it out. But
that was the previous episode.
That's not what it is.
Two Mummy Mia.
That's not what it is.
This episode is called Rock the Boat.
This has been an episode of
The Gods Must Be Crazy.
We hope that you enjoyed listening in. We will be posting episodes every other week or so. So, you know, please join us for the next one.
In terms of sources, where we got our stories, and how we know what we know, we try to do as much research as possible, within a reasonable amount of time, of course, and we try to stay close to the original tellers of the tale as much as possible. However, we do know that a lot of our mythology comes from oral tradition, stories that your grandma and your grandma's grandma and your grandma's grandma's grandma told you. So, if our renditions or our stories are a little bit different from what you know and what you grew up with, please do let us know.
Follow us on Instagram at thegodsmustbecrazy.pod. We do post some additional information there. We post the teasers of what's coming next, you know, and any other things you may be curious about that we feature in our episodes. Who is Gardo Versace and why does he keep appearing in these different episodes? What are the different recipes that we feature for tinola and black rice and adobo and stuff like that? And obviously, it's where we would love to hear from you as well. If you have any other stories that you want to feature, or maybe requests of things that you want us to feature. There's also a way to directly talk to us and share any of your stories. So if you go to our anchor.fm website, there's a button there with a plus sign and it says message, and you can actually record voice notes or voice memos for us to listen to and also possibly feature in the episodes themselves.
And of course, where you do listen to us, whatever platform it could be, please do rate, review, subscribe, download. We are on Spotify. We are on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. We're even on Audible.
Yeah.
So please share with your friends, tag your friends on our social media, and share your stories too if you feel like it.
Yeah, the best way to support, you know, young and new podcasts like us is really just to spread the word out. So if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, you know, put in a rating and maybe a review of what you like about the show. Or if not, you know, just share it with your friends on social media, and you know, that would be really, really helpful for us. So until next time,
bye.